Siren Radio.
Only £29.4 million. Only £29.4 million. It seems a drop in the ocean, Anna. Really, £29.4 million. I mean, that's only what, about sort of twice your average salary, as the sirens actually are out to get you. Yay! Yeah, exactly. So whereabouts in the joyous metropolis or metropolis that is London are you currently?
I decided to go to the centre of the universe, which is Hounslow. Much kind of pointed out as not the best place in the world, but you know what? It's an interesting place. It's very colourful. And it's vibrant, and I had a 10-minute stop at the police station, which I wasn't expecting to do. Mm-hmm. Somebody dropped a wallet in the middle of the road.
What, deliberately? Just as a matter of course?
No, well, I don't think so. I think, and I went to the nearest market store holder and said, maybe you might hold on to this, and he went, no, take it to the police station. And 20 minutes later, I was in the queue for about 10, and there, signing bits of paper for 10. But no, it's an interesting, very cosmopolitan part of the world, and there's lots of exciting supermarkets that have Turkish, Arabic and Middle Eastern vegetables, food, that kind of thing. So it's brilliant.
Sounds like a whole new,
very exciting,
Hounslow-esque experience. And Anna, it falls to your good self to formally welcome, in your capacity as senior midweek drivette, because that's what you are at these particular moments in time, head girl, as I like to say, you can actually welcome a newbie to the midweek drive era, and that would be originally from Hull, the awesome Jessie Williams.
Hello, welcome, Jessie.
Thank you, hello.
Hello.
The first sort of handover has been unsuccessfully from that perspective. And Jessie, apropos of Avengers Infinity War, you've seen it twice.
Yeah, I have already.
So you're singularly sort of responsible for doubling up the box office takes there from that perspective, which is wonderful. I suspect, Anna, you probably won't be having Avengers Infinity War on your list of things to do in the near future. No, I take that not. That's not. Have you lost us again, Anna? Or is it just a case of...
No,
you
know, I don't know why there's planes flying overhead. Huh. That's the other thing that's not very great fun in Hounslow.
Well,
I don't know whether they affect the signal, but maybe I won't come here again on a midweek drive day.
It's always interesting, because if those planes are overhead sending signals, of course, it's because of the proximity to Heathrow Airport, I believe.
You can wave at the pilot. I've experienced that you can actually wave at pilots in Hounslow because they fly so damn low at this point.
Yeah,
when they're landing, of course.
You see, this is something which, I mean, obviously, in terms of Humberside, the closest is, I think, Robin Hood Airport. That's the closest airport.
Well, there's Humberside Airport.
There is, of course, yes, yeah. There's that. But, you know, somehow I think if you're waving at the pilot, maybe the plane is just a bit too low. Just a thought.
Yes. Very scary.
Yeah. Dylan Thomas. Are you a fan? Have you been a fan? The reason I'm actually raising Dylan Thomas, because you also were an English graduate, Anna Lewis, and Jessie is going to be an English and journalism graduate in about a year or so from now. Yeah.
I loved it. I love Dylan Thomas. There was a brilliant film they made of his life about, well, I don't know how many years ago, but it was supposed to be a very faithful representation of his life. And it was a very peculiar life. He was his own worst enemy, really. But then if you get someone who drinks a lot, they're likely to go down that slippery slope, aren't they? Let's be quite honest.
Well, this is very true, of course. And Dylan Thomas, the subject of a co-production of both Paul Zollo and Daryl Purpose, will be listening to one of their musical tributes to Dylan Thomas in a matter of 40 minutes or so from now. But Anna, let's talk about entropy, because it's that things tend to disorder, that the universe falls apart, the wheel cannot hold any kind of literary allusion you wish to sort of add to this. And in one of your Facebook posts, literally just put up, 16 hours ago, we have a shot of a kind of concrete collapse and the word, a single word from Anna Lewis there, neglect.
Yes.
Pray explain why you're hanging around graveyards in London and why, and cemeteries, and why this is an important
I've
sort of aspect.
I've taken it a stage further, and I contacted the head of graveyards of Hounslow and Isleworth today. It's extremely sad. People walk their dogs through the graveyard off leash, and then they poop everywhere.
No. Are you sure it wasn't a hedgehog, Anna? I mean, I noticed one of the comments said it could have been a hedgehog that kind of was...
Well, the one I nearly trod on wasn't a hedgehog. It was a fully blown doggy one,
right, I swear.
Very unpleasant.
Have they not heard of pooper scoopers in Hounslow? I mean, for cemeteries as well. I mean, can they not get the ghosts to actually have some ghostly pooper scoopers to actually work through this whole process?
Yeah. But if they lived after the graveyard, the dogs wouldn't poop there.
Either way, though, looking at this particular shot of neglect with, I mean, again, the line was saying at least the headstone hasn't collapsed as yet. That would mean some phenomenal, I mean, has there been an earthquake that's taken place there? What's this sort of challenge that we've got here for our ancestors?
Well, I think graveyards, as I said to the graveyard man this morning, are for dead people. But they're also for the living to enjoy in as much as it's you have to be reflective to go through a graveyard and respectful. And there's some drive to keep things wild in that graveyard, which I don't kind of go with.
Let's put it to our Humberside correspondent, Jesse. Graveyards should be left alone. Should we all just convert to crematoriums? Has Anna got a point that actually, if you've got graveyards, don't walk your dogs in graveyards? It's not acceptable, and it's unfortunate.
I feel like if you're going to walk your dog in a graveyard, at least you should pick up anything leave behind, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think if someone's already, like, if someone's buried one of their family members there, you should obviously keep it as clean and tidy as possible.
Well, there hasn't been a burial there for quite some time, but the point is this. When there's a woman who lives in the area who just thinks that the area should be attracting wildflowers and birds and all the rest of it. But the problem is, when you've got long grass and weeds and ivy everywhere, people think it is neglected and they will let their dogs go up there and keep them. They won't keep them on a leash. So that's when you end up with problems like that. And tombstones that are falling over and tombstones with litter inside them. There's this box grave with loads of tin cans and... Oh, it's depressing.
Anna, this may be the reason that this may be the reason Destiny's taken you from Jersey to Isleworth. You know, all those years in Jersey, and actually there have been people who've departed this planet in graveyards in Isleworth and Hounslow who are crying out for some support, and you're just leading that charge.
You'll notice one remark, which is, "It wouldn't happen in Jersey" by Daniel Bennett.
I did actually notice that.
He's right. He wrote, "It wouldn't happen in Jersey," and he's right. People in Jersey have their dogs on leashes. You don't normally get dogs racing around pooping in graveyards. That's the truth.
And with the time coming around to 5:10 PM on that bombshell of a note saying that in Jersey you don't normally get, keyword normally, don't normally get canines pooping on graveyards, it's time to put those last two questions to you, Anna, with, of course, the excitement that next week is indeed our Eurovision preview special.
Yay!
Exactly. Just quality music personifies. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Anna Lewis?
I have, poops, Dylan, Thomas and all. Thank you.
Exactly. So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Oh, I think so, yes. If you'll have me next week, I'll be here. No problem.
Music in my mind saying it's gonna be alright. to the fella over there with a hella good head. Come on, baby, sugar, shake it off. We're playing, gonna play, 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 and the hate are gonna hate, hate, hate. But baby, I'm just gonna shake, shake it off, shake.
And from Nashville to Saltburn by the sea, Els Bailey coming back to Britain. Well, quite rightly so. She's from Bristol originally and also co-host of Sound and Country Vision. And she will be in Saltburn at back end of the month. That's May 26th. What say you to that, Bill Coles? Will you be saying, well, that's enough to get me travelling across the border to actually cross back down into the land of England again and see Saltburn by the sea just to see Els Bailey perform?
I've never heard of Saltburn by the Sea. Where is Saltburn?
You've never heard of Saltburn by the Sea. Let's just put this to Jesse Williams. Jesse, have you ever heard of Saltburn by the Sea?
No, I haven't.
Good grief. Jesse, originally from Humberside. If you're on the coast, okay, so keep going north by the coast. You go up to Scarborough.
Yeah.
Yep. Go beyond Scarborough, you come up to Whitby.
Yeah.
Okay. Go beyond Whitby, not as far as Redcar, you'll come to Saltburn by the Sea.
Right.
Place which actually once hosted a 12-hour radio show, non-stop radio show, hosted by my good self in the Victorian Saltburn Funicular Lift in 2009, literally interviewing folk consistently for 12 hours, going up and down and up and down. And Els Bailey is going to be performing there as well. That's a little confession for this week. Sorry?
Was the lift moving as well?
Yes, of course it was. That was the whole point. It was the restoration. It had been restored to its Victorian height of glory with the water-operated funicular lift. And so what better way than to celebrate with it? You can actually go online and actually access the details of the funicular lift. In fact, whilst you're interviewing Jesse about life, the universe, and indeed why she has her fantastic blog site in which she makes food from the movies. Is that the best way? Is that makes food from the movies or makes food as you see it in the movies?
Well, I guess I make food that was in movies more than anything else. So I guess food from the movies would probably be the best way to describe
it. Okay, so that's a nice angle to work through that. So, I mean, that's your cue, William, to actually quiz
Excellent.
Jez about life, the universe.
Which movies have been your sort of most fertile hunting ground?
Oh, there's been all sorts. I've done Elf. I did the spaghetti from Elf. And I did the grey stuff from Beauty and the Beast. I've done all sorts.
What about The Godfather?
That's my next one. I was going to do the spaghetti and the tomato sauce from The Godfather.
And also in Goodfellas, there's some great food in that one when they're locked up in jail and they're doing, I remember they're doing something with lobsters.
Yeah, I could do that.
Excellent. So do you just see the food and then get going and, how do you decide how to cook the stuff up?
A lot of the time it's films that I love, so I did Elf because it's one of my favourite Christmas films, and when I was doing it, it was kind of near Christmas, so I did that one, and then other times it's just films that, like, my dad suggests to me because he is obsessed with films as well, so I just kind of just
Any children's films in there, then? I mean, apart from Elf?
I haven't done any children's films. Well, there's Beauty and the Beast. I guess you could class that as a children's film, couldn't you? So
I think you probably would, yep.
Yeah, that's about it, I think. I think that's the only children's film I've done.
So do you do topical things then, like for Christmas, obviously you've got Elf, and then, say, Valentine's Day, or are you going to do it like that? How are you picking them? And at the moment, you're just cherry-picking the ones you like.
Yeah, at the minute, I'm just doing that, but I think I will probably end up doing themed ones. Like, I reckon I'll do some Halloween ones and stuff like that at some point.
Horror film. So would you do Halloween the movie or Friday the 13th?
Well, do either of them actually have food in?
I can't stand horror films. They terrify me.
Yeah, I mean, Friday, I mean, you could argue that Halloween has pumpkins in.
Yeah.
See what we did there?
Yeah.
And Friday the 13th, well, you could get fish. You know, you could actually keep it on a sort of religious theme as well from that perspective. If you did Psycho, you'd have flies. Maybe not. All sorts of things. Just to confirm that, just for William and Alistair, Jess, you can confirm that. 4th of July, 2011, Independence Day 2011, the Saltburn Funicular Lift Challenge. You can see the first there, part one. Actually, it's 12 parts of that Funicular Lift Challenge, which is actually there. So if you wish to listen to the show in its entirety, I'll send you a hyperlink if you wish, William, because you obviously share this on our podbean.com website, southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com thing.
Yeah. From do you have the highlights?
Yeah,
well, or do I have to watch all 12?
Well, we've given you highlights in the kind of 12 segments that are actually there. You know, you can go part one or choose whichever one you want to go through. Anyway,
okay. I was just hoping you were going to head me towards the main one. Oh. I'm not sure if I've got 12 hours available to watch the whole lot.
Save it, you know, step by step. People are still downloading it even today. We're approaching 900 downloads for most of the things. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's a grower. It's a slow burn, as they use to use that vernacular for the movie industry and so on. Anyway, I realise that for contractual reasons, we need to press this button here.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Oh, good indeed. Jessie, you are studying English and journalism.
I am indeed.
Journalism and English at the University of Lincoln in your second year. Travelled all the way down from Hull to civilise the citizens of Lincoln. Sorry, I've said it. There we are. Cross the A15. It's needed, Bill. You know that sometimes. Basic savages until Jess arrived and sort of, you know, got them eating with cooking utensils. It was all finger food and everything from that point of view. How have you found the last 2 years?
I've loved them. They've been amazing, to be honest. Like, I know I'm not that far away from home, but it's still a bit of a change, isn't it? So
it's never dull in Hull.
It's not. It's never dull in Hull.
Exactly. That's the classic line we actually want to go through. Dry white wine. That's another sort of classic Hull scenario there. And, of course, the classic syrup on a rope.
Syrup on a rope.
Oh, genius. Do you not feel, William, that really you should actually look to set your next romantic novel in the joys of Kingston-upon-Hull, Humberside, or whatever else the citizens of the region actually wish to call themselves this particular time of the day?
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, I love Hull. I've been there a number of times. I don't know it that well. Maybe I could. What sort of story are you suggesting, Alex?
Well, I'm thinking make use of the deep. You could make use of Andy Comfort and the BBC Humberside Breakfast Show. Shameless plug, Andy. Actually, it's the Drive Time Show. He's in competition with us now. But I was on the show a couple of days ago, so what the hey. And you've got, I suppose, the tale of the Inglemite Avenue. So you could actually have an academic at the University of Hull who kind of gets connected with somebody at the deep with the water scenario there and every other bits and pieces. And where would you take it, Jess? What's the next line we should actually introduce?
Oh, there's too many places that you could
too many,
go with
you
it.
See, literally.
There's so many places in Hull that are so romantic and are so lovely.
There you have it, you see. So, you know, the message is out there, William. You know, get yourself on the bike. You forget all the Santiago pilgrimages and so on and so forth and actually make your way across the wolds to Hull.
Okay. What about Wilberforce? I mean, is Wilberforce the main guy from Hull that we know of?
Well, he didn't have any slaves, did he? Let's face it, you know. It was very important, so he sort of took it on that basics. But yes, Wilberforce was actually there. And, yeah, I mean, the House Martins, they're from Hull, I believe?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Mick Ronson, was he from Hull?
Yes, he was definitely from
Hull. He was definitely from Hull.
And then there's Woody Woodmansey as well, who was from Driffield, but that's about half an hour away.
Close as, right? I mean, yeah. You know, the Driffield County show, Hull, it's pretty much the same from that point of view, so it's probably stuff. I mean, I feel we're sort of working through this. And William, any thoughts on Dylan Thomas?
Oh, yes. Under Milkwood and his famous place, Laregub.
Mm-hmm.
No, Laregub. You have to spell it backwards to understand quite what he was on about.
Of course.
With Richard Burton. What about Dylan Thomas?
Well, in a matter of moments, we'll be speaking to the joys of Paul Zollo. We'll be talking about his recent work with Daryl Purpose, which is actually a ballad all about Dylan Thomas, which, you know, is worthwhile sort of downloading a whole range of other bits and pieces for, but I just put it out there. Glamrock, Will. William, Bill, whatever we're calling you to, Mr. Coles, Glamrock. Were you ever into Glamrock, or was it something which was well before your time?
I guess a little bit, not overly. I mean, a little bit. But
follow Siren on Twitter.
Hmm. Sorry, that's all right.
Thinking of Dylan Thomas, though, is he, as writers go, is he the biggest drinker, or would he be up there with Hemingway, who said, write drunk, edit sober?
Wouldn't advise that for any of our students, but it does sometimes happen, certainly. Write drunk, edit sober. So, thoughts to maybe bear in mind from that perspective. I'm sure we could name names, but we won't. Again, William, you've just bopped another bombshell, and we're almost heading off to Philip Rambo, who'll be talking about The Hobo's Lullaby and a whole heap of other goodies to work us through that. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I've loved it. I'm going to check out more drunk writers. Yes, thank you.
And maybe do it whilst you're looking at the Saltburn Funicular Lift Challenge as parts 1 through 12 from the 4th of July 2011. It might sort of just add a sort of a frisson to the evening, which I'm sure the whole family will actually gather around and say, Father, Father, what have you actually brought us today from the midweek drive that we can actually share with our school chums in Edinburgh in the next 24 hours? And then you can sit them down, have a nice family conversation on that basis, and it's just wonderful. At least that's the image I have of the Coles household when they're sort of settling
down. I think they might be able to stomach it for 5 minutes. Yeah. Particularly if it's a video of you. That's just going.
It's not a video, it's all audio. You don't have to worry about it. Okay. You can just do it
even
as you go along.
10 minutes then.
What? it's extraordinary. Never mind. 5:25. You'll be back next week?
Certainly will. Thank you.
Can't find a room. Wine is
I'm sure he will if he asks nicely. Johnny Come Home, Fine Young Cannibals, with of course Roland Gift, also from Humberside. Now, when you've spent a lifetime writing and performing with musicians and bands such as Brian Eno, Mick Ronson, Ellen Foley, Kirsty MacColl, clearly you've earned the right to be classified as an awesome artist. And we're delighted to welcome now, nothing to do with respect to Sylvester Stallone and the Vietnamese War, but it's our very own Philip Rambo back on the airwaves. How are you, Philip? All right?
Hi, yeah. Fine. Pretty good.
Excellent stuff. Now, I have been privileged to actually listen to what we're about to play in a few moments, and I have to say, it's poignant, it's heart-rending, and it's kind of like a slice of life writ large in so many ways. I don't know why. Maybe it's because of your connection with glam rock and various other scenarios, glam-themed pub rock and so on, that I wasn't expecting the Hobo's Lament. So share with us. What was your rationale for putting this together? Because it's got one of those wonderful, melancholic aspects of life where you just think, well, that's what it's all about then, really.
I think it started with Billy Bragg and Joe Henry, who've been working a lot together doing, they did that Railway series of songs recorded on railways. And they sang The Hobo's Lullaby, which is a song written by Woody Guthrie. And I thought about it, I listened to that and enjoyed it. It was a couple of months ago. And just at the same time, I was getting involved with being asked to make a contribution to what's going to be an album for Music Minds, which is not a charity in itself. It's just a specific group that's going to help and raise awareness and money and give it to charities for mental health. And to celebrate the Mental Health Day and bring some awareness to that in October, which is World Mental Health Day, October the 10th. An album's going to be with a lot of great, really great artists providing tracks for this purpose. And I thought, well, The Hobo's Lullaby is something that's, from a different era. It was written by Woody Guthrie at a time when being a hobo was an understood thing. It's people who rode the rails in America during the Depression when it started going from point A to point B. And that's really not, it's not done anymore. There's, there's too much security. There aren't that many freight trains. And in England, it's never been an issue. And I just was thinking about that and thought, well, to a certain extent, homeless people are like hobos or the hobos of today. And so I thought I'd just do something that was involved in that. And then, of course, homelessness is an issue that is very close to mental health issues. A lot of homeless people suffer from them. So that was my take on it. And I thought I'd keep it in the same spirit. Really simple, really basic. There's no point in making a sort of dramatic musicality about it. So it's as pared back as you can get.
Well, as our mutual friend Tony McDonald would say, as a writer, Rambo always was peerless, and writer credits tick off like marks in a train spotter notepad. We'll talk about your connection with Kirsty MacColl and a variety of other things as well. But for the moment, would you like to introduce yourself singing the joys of the Hobo's Lullaby? Philip, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Alex. So this is The Hobo's Lullaby. I'm joined on this. It's just me on guitar, but I've been joined by CJ Chris Hillman on pedal steel. And I hope you really enjoy it and makes you give a thought towards people who are less fortunate than us.
But for love children. Hold your children tight. How many children are sleeping rough tonight? If you're struggling for meaning, if you're struggling to get by, care for everyone you meet, that's the hobo's lullaby. Sometimes the river's swollen, sometimes the river runs dry. Make the best of what you've got. That's the hobo's lullaby. Make the best of what you've got. That's the hobo's lullaby.
Observations are as universal as they are pertinent, as he steps perhaps back even further than his own career allows and remembers when protest was the only way forward. Jesse, what did you make of the Hobo's Lullaby?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was really poignant.
A round of applause, please, Philip Rambo. Yay! Philip, absolutely awesome. Why 2 years is far too long. Clearly, genius, you can't hurry it. That's the important thing. It's worked through that. Philip, would you like to share with us your connection with Kirsty MacColl, please? The late, great Kirsty MacColl.
Sure. I met Kirsty way back when. I was at a party, 30th birthday party, and she arrived with my press officer at the time. She was in tow with him and fancied him as a social thing, and didn't kind of work out. She was a better songwriter than a chooser appropriate boyfriends, but maybe that was part to she wrote You Broke My Heart in 17 Places and Shepherd's Bush is one of them, about that guy. But anyway, we were introduced. She had just signed to Stiff Records and I just signed to EMI Records, and she was kind of disinterested in me altogether. She's more interested in hanging out with this guy, until she found out that actually I was between places to live, and I was actually staying at Glenn's house, in the living room on the front door. The advance hasn't come through from the record label yet. As soon as she found out that, she kind of changed her attitude towards me. She's going, "Oh, right, you're hanging around there. Is that where you're? You know, is that your phone number at Glenn's place?" And I was like, "Yeah." So she said, "Well, let's." You know, Glenn was saying, "You guys should write together." So anyway, she rang me up one day. I was a few days later. I had my guitar on, and she said, "I've got an idea for a song." And I said, "What's that?" She said, "There's a guy works down the chip shop, swears he's Elvis." I said, "Well, that's a great idea. Let me work on that for a bit," which I did for about 5 minutes, rang her back and said, "I think I've got the chorus for that." So we got together and started, you know, wrote that song, finished it, then wrote another one. And those two songs were on her first album, Desperate Character, which took a while to come out because she didn't stay on Stiff Records. There's a lot of stories about that. And then we started, we were friends and we were workmates. We wrote a couple of things. We had some fallings out for a year, for, you know, sort of personal reasons. And we got back together, wrote a few more songs together. And, she was a great, great talent, great person, vivacious, bright, a lot of fun to be with. She worked through different ways of writing with people. So that was something that developed and was a pleasure to see how the songwriting process changed for her and for me. And it was, it's a great tragedy that she's not here There are a lot of people, I don't think there are many female singer-songwriters in the world today who haven't been influenced or, you know, who appreciate her talent.
I think that's absolutely spot on and a worthy tribute. Jesse, you said your mum would be very jealous about the connection with Kirsty MacColl.
Yeah, she absolutely loves Kirsty MacColl. She always has done. It's one of my main memories of my mum.
There we are. And in addition to that, of course, keeping the sort of awesomeness going, Mick Ronson, another lad from Hull, of course,
yeah.
The late, great Mick Ronson. Got to share with us, Philip, the connection with Mick Ronson.
Sure, yeah. When I first got to England, I was in a band called The Winkies, who were a pub rock band. And when the band broke up, after a couple of years of... we did an album, band broke up on the day the album was released, not a very good idea. Then I released a solo single on the label that we were signed to. John Peel liked it, got some good play, didn't sell very many records, and I went from being a hero to zero in the space of one single release, kind of. And I went to the States for the punk era there, which I was interested in, did some stuff over there, and when I came back... record label said, everything's forgiven. We're going to put some, you know, attention back into what you're doing. And I got some rehearsal space and time. I was introduced to Maggie Ronson, Nick's sister. So we were doing some gigs together. Maggie and Della on backing vocals. And Nick had just finished coming off the Rolling Thunder review with Bob Dylan, playing on that for the whole tour. And he just came back to London to chill out, asked Maggie what was going on, what she was doing. She said, I'm playing, you know, with this young songwriter. Mick said, well, I'd like to check him out if you're in his band. So Maggie said to me, do you mind if our Michael comes down to a rehearsal? I was like, are you kidding? Like, oh, sure, that's fine with me. So one day we were rehearsing at Manos down at King's Road, and sure enough, knocked on the door. And then he walks with his Mesa Boogie amp in one hand and his famous blonde Les Paul in the other and goes, Brad, where do I plug in? I go, don't you want to listen? He went, nah, why? What's to listen? Let's just play. And so he was just the most amazingly positive, creative person. And he rehearsed with us. We were a three-piece. And we did a bunch of gigs in London and wound up with one recording date. That was set up by the label at the time, and we did four tracks. He and Mick only, you know, played on a couple of them, and we never got to finish them because the record company didn't like them. I thought it was just a thrash. They were really great, and there's only one track that we finished. But at that point, that was the end of my relationship with the record label, and things broke up. But Mick being Mick, he went off with Ian Hunter to America for a Hunter Ronson tour and was introduced to Ellen Foley, who was the featured backing vocalist in Bat Out of Hell, a massive worldwide hit. And Ellen got a record deal with CBS. She's not a writer. She doesn't write at all. Mick and Ian Hunter were asked to record, produce her album. And that's a good story in itself. Mick asked the record label, he said, well, we need to look at contemporary writers, so give us $500 and we'll go shopping at Sam the Record Man or something like that. And when I, and Mick, you know, I was coming over to New York and Mick said, come meet Ellen. When I got there, she had a flat with more albums than you've ever seen in your life. $500 would buy a lot of albums in 1979, right? So, I played her a couple of songs that Mick knew that we played live, and she liked them, and that wound up with Night Out, a song of mine, being the title track for her album, and another song called Young Lust that was recorded and produced by Mick and Ian. So, unfortunately, I lost touch back in those days, you know, before mobile phones and for social media. When you're living in a different country, it's hard to stay in touch with people. So Mick stayed in America doing stuff with Ian, and I came back, got off my record label, and then recorded my first album, my first solo album, which was released
It's a movie just waiting to be written. And we've been actually connected in the studio as well by our very own host of Sound and Country Vision. That'll be the fabulous Tessa Snart. How are you, Tessa?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Just sitting back listening to the awesomeness of Philip Rambo there.
It's amazing. I mean, the people you've met and got to work with.
The Hobo's Lullaby, absolutely awesome.
I think I caught a glimpse of it. You just played it and it sounded really lovely.
But Tessa, it falls to you to actually ask Philip Rambo those last two questions, because we've got to go off to the Sci-Fi London Film Festival in London. I know. Amazing. Go for it.
Hi, Philip. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
Oh, yeah, it's nice to, you're all very complimentary.
Well, we know good talent, don't we?
Exactly.
And will you be joining us again on the show soon?
Any time you would like to continue with some of these stories.
Philip, it's essential because otherwise Jesse's mum will never forgive us, so obviously we need to have some of other connections from that point of view. Here's Bowie and Ronson with their version of the track that went out for Lulu, Man Who Sold the World. Hey ho.
We passed up on the stairs. We spoke of what and when. Although I wasn't there, he said I was his friend, which gave us some surprise. I spoke into his eyes. I thought you died alone a long, long time ago. I roamed. I gazed a gazeless stare at all the millions here. We must have died alone a long, long time ago.
Not referring to Louis Savvy or anybody else from that point of view, David Bowie, Man Who Sold the World, but we can say live in London, because they're referring to and reporting on behalf of the Midweek Drive. We have relative Midweek Drive newbie George. How are you, George?
I'm very good, thank you.
Marvellous. George, of course, doing a fabulous impersonation of Philip Rambo, because when I first dialed the number, I thought, oh, we've got Philip back again. We put the phone down and I said, oh, what's he expecting? But it is Holly's phone, but George is holding it, quite rightly so too, because George was also part of the team that went in for the 48-hour film challenge. Has Louis looked after you? Have you met the awesome Louis Savvy as such? Where exactly are you at present, George?
We're at Stratford in the picture house right now. Holly's just joined me.
Hi, Alex.
Hello, Holly.
Hi, Holly.
So you've walked up the footsteps, you've gone up the stairs, you're in the Stratford base there. I know it well, an awesome place, etc. Have you been given your access all areas passes?
Yeah, we have. We've had access to the bar as well. And Robbie's here as well, the infamous Robbie, who is awake and standing.
Is he actually awake? He's actually awake and conscious. Grief.
Yeah,
well,
I'm here.
Well, fantastic. So, well, Holly, in the studio, we've got a wonderful newbie, Jessie Williams, who's reading English and Journalism at Level 2. So she's just soaking up the atmosphere and has already been, I think, quite impressed with speaking to a chap who worked extensively in the Grantson. So
yep.
That's good. Excellent. And Jessie, actually, wonderful scenario here, because as we learned in the first part of the programme, she likes to make food based on movies, food seen in the movies, which you can see on your own blog site, which of course is the blog site.
Oh, I completely forgot the name of it.
It's all right. We'll remember the.
We can
the
search her name. Search her name.
We'll be there, and you can hear Tessa snort from that perspective. Now, clearly, if Tessa hadn't been snowed under with dissertation work and various other bits and pieces, and of course various other deadlines and so on, she would have been with you in London. I would have been there myself, actually.
Yeah.
So it's up to you, Holly, to just take us through, and the listener, through what you've been doing so far on another one of Holly's midweek drive adventures in London with friends.
Well, we have just arrived, and we're just about to go into one of the shorts, the screenings of the shorts, before the awards of the 48-hour film challenge. But George has actually had a sneak preview online through the film, so what is in store for us, George?
Well, actually, there's a lot of sci-fi, believe it or not. There's one about... I'm going to sound completely ridiculous now. There is one about a futuristic society where nobody's allowed to break any laws, which is rather good. That's in the shortlist. That's one of the ones that's showing.
That sounds good, actually, moment. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the one that stuck out most to me, to be honest.
And then we've got a screening of a feature film called Nothing Really Happened, which I think is based in a mattress store and the whole world just collapses around this character. So, yeah. We've got things to look forward to.
Lots of things to review there. And, of course, George, a little helpful hint. Perhaps the clue is in the title, Sci-Fi London. You're probably going to get a lot of science fiction there. Just a minor point. I know it's media production students, sometimes you just as you go to a rom-com festival, you're probably going to have some romantic comedy movies there as well. That's where it goes. Tessa, any questions for Holly and her team? Or Holly and her boys? Holly and her homies? Now, there's a series just waiting to be made. Carry on.
What are your surroundings like at the minute? Like, paint a picture. What's kind of going on? I assume it's quite busy.
Lots of game consoles, a big open bar, and lots of screens.
Game consoles that you can actually play?
Yeah, we've been playing Mario.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like a gaming filmer's dream, then.
Yeah, everyone has either got a bright painted, I'm assuming glow-in-the-dark nails, or is wearing alien-themed clothing as well. So that's fun to see.
Yeah, a lot of props around, lots of, props and sets.
You'll have to get lots of pictures for us.
Yes, we will.
I fully expect an equivalent to the London Fashion Week you actually did a wee while ago for all features and a whole range of sort of factors there. Clearly without Kaylee Umfraville, because Kaylee Umfraville has... clearly it's a science fiction thing. Kaylee Umfraville has actually separated by binary division into both Robbie and George, because I've never seen the three of them together.
That is true.
Yeah. it's a definite thought there. So, Holly, how are you going to be there for this evening? What's the plan? Or is it a case of, well, we've done our midweek drive report, now we're going to get completely sozzled?
No, we've got things to watch.
Good.
We've got, a short back screening, nothing really happened, and then we've got the awards. So it'll be good to see what we have been put up against, or, why we didn't make the shortlist or whatever.
I'm still recovering from that, I have to say. I mean, I'm always tempted to say I feel as though it's almost like a well-known movie that was recently directed by the Russo brothers where people just turn into dust. I can't say what it is, but it's just one of those things where just fade, and I think, where have we gone? Tessa?
Are you actually travelling back tonight, then? Back to Lincoln?
No, staying at Robbie's.
Oh, OK.
For the night, so hopefully...
There we go.
Stick to that plan.
I'd take the option of staying at Robbie's. It beats actually a cardboard box on the Want to Water embankment any time.
I did wonder, because I'm sure it finishes quite late, the event. So
we're going to have a chat to Louis once we find him again and just, you know, get the lowdown.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe see if he's around. But,
Well, make sure that Louis is still wearing his lime green outfit. I know we'll be speaking tomorrow morning to Fiona Moore, who's also going to be at the festival, has been doing a variety of things, Professor Fiona Moore and so on. So we'll keep the flag flying from that perspective. And does this inspire you, Holly, to actually put another entry into the 48-hour film challenge next year?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're planning on still being a little group, so we will hopefully get, you know, a better set of questions and brief detail.
Yes. Exactly. It'd be really in good time, etc. George, we had a quick hello to Robbie, but I think he's gone unconscious again now, so it's all right. We don't want to sort of... Is he still awake? Nudge him, George. Wake him up.
It's too much for Robbie.
It's like Robbie, the equivalent of the dormouse, really. It's a little dormouse. They just come at me as soon as that. It's much appreciated. Have you enjoyed your connection with the programme today, Holly McGrattan?
We have indeed. Thank you very much. Good to be on the other side of the... telephone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's strange you being on the other end.
It's strange, but always interconnected. So will you be back with us next week? That's the next critical question we need to ask you.
Probably in the studio.
In the studio. Just in time for our pre-Eurovision Song Contest epic. You know, it's amazing. So that'll all be happening. This is all good news. We're going to go off to Los Angeles in a few moments to speak to Paul Zollo, musician and journalist extraordinaire, to talk about it. So that little tribute he co-wrote with Daryl Purpose to Dylan Thomas. Go for it, please. Tessa, last two questions for Holly and her homies, as I refer to them, because I think that's the... These are my homies. These are going... I can say all the bling and all of that. It didn't work.
Holly and your homies, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today? On the other end of the telephone?
Yeah.
Nice.
Robbie's debut. He's buzzing to come back.
Whoa.
There we go.
Robbie's buzzing.
And I take it, well, we've kind of just confirmed you will be back in the studio with us next week.
Yes, that is the plan.
Enjoy the event, take care, and give our best to Louis Savvy, and we'll speak soon. Take care now.
Shining up his rifles, the coffee starts to perk. Scanning over headlines as the neighbors go to work. This is another postal worker with a gun, has gone berserk. Started shooting everyone.